Do you have a dark curiosity? Heart Starts Pounding, Horrors, Hauntings, and Mysteries is a weekly podcast hosted by me, Kaylin Moore. Check out Heart Starts Pounding on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Is it cold out there or is it just me? I mean, my goodness, freezing cold temperatures, but the flame never stops here at 92.2 The Fan. The fire never stops here at 92.2 The Fan. We got the heat on. We're staying warm. I hope that you will, as I said in my tweet I just posted, grab a blanket, get that fire revving at home, and turn on 92.2 The Fan and listen to us throughout the night. We'll try our best to keep you warm. Okay? Sound like a plan? Good. 216-474-0092. Spencer German with you till 11 o'clock. We got a fun show planned, including the debut of a new segment that I'm calling The Hard Truths. And the hard truths tonight revolve around your conference championship weekend. So I'll explain it more as we get closer. We'll do that maybe 8 o'clock, actually, might be the time. Maybe a little bit after that. We'll see where we're at. We have one guest, Ian Valentino, will join me at 9:20. He is an NFL draft analyst for A to Z Sports and the 33rd team. I want to pick his brain about this quarterback class, because the more and more I read up on some of the guys that you can get in the later rounds, the more and more I'm intrigued. Especially one particular quarterback that we just watched win a national championship the other night, which we have some things to talk about with him and the Buckeyes as well. You can hit me up on Twitter at @Spencito_, and I'm sure a lot of you are going to want to do that, because I am going to rile some people up with this opening segment by simply just telling you, I heard Daryl on with the Afternoon Boys. I like that. If we're gonna call, if Nick's gonna call them the Morning Boys, I think I can have the liberties to call them the Afternoon Boys. I kind of like that. Can just do it for every show. The Midday Boys, although they're more like older gentlemen. So I want to sort of give them their flowers and respects for Baskin and Phelps. But regardless, the more and more I think about it, the more and more I talk about it, the more and more I write about it, I think trading down has to be the path for the Browns in the draft in April. And I get it. Like, it's a controversial topic because everybody's waiting for this team to find a quarterback. They completely botched the Deshaun Watson thing, obviously. And so here they are left holding the bag, and you have the number two overall pick. You can't pass up this opportunity, right? Well, as I've said numerous times on these airwaves, I get it, but you also can't just take a quarterback to take a quarterback. Like, that's how you get, like, if you pick wrong, or you just take one because he's there too, and you're drafting because it's a massive need for you, you could set the organization back years because of that. And I'm on the record of saying, like, I don't think this team is as far away as some people make it out to be. I just don't. You know, look around. I see a premier cornerback on the defense. I see a premier pass rusher on the defense. I see an offensive line that still has the makings, as you go back to Kevin Stefanski's offense, to still produce at a decently high level, at least one half of it, one side of it. You know, Joel Bitonio, I think, still is playing at a solid enough level to be a formative player for you if he decides not to hang him up and play one more year. You got to figure out the tackle spot. We know that. You know, I think if Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah can still play, you have a great linebacker on the defensive side of the ball. You have a number one wide receiver. Running back is something you got to figure out. I actually think there's another need on offense that I'll get to that is kind of going under the radar or is underrated later in the show. But I don't look around and see a team that is like devoid of talent and needs to start all over, which has been part of my argument against that exact practice this entire time. They still do, though. They still could use the draft picks and banking on a bunch of draft picks to bring in more talent at a... And here's part of it, right? Like, last 3 years, you didn't have any first-round picks. So in a way, you are kind of playing catch-up by essentially trying to land players this year that can be, you know, contributors this year or as close to, like, within the next couple years, be contributing players for you that you can kind of build around for the future. That's the easiest way for us to get this thing. Maybe not the easiest way, because the easiest way would be draft a quarterback, hit on that position. So maybe that's the easiest way. But if you're not, if you don't feel good about these QBs, and the idea or the goal becomes, well, hey, we got to sort of fill out this roster in some areas. We got to make up some ground in the players that we weren't able to draft the last couple years. Here's some needs that we have. Let's do this and build a great team around whatever quarterback we could potentially get next year. I think that is the path forward that you got to take. I just do. And everybody who's worried about, like, well, you're here now. When are you going to get back here if you make the playoffs next year? Or you're just good enough next year to, like, be a fringe playoff team? Okay. I see your point. But here's the thing. If you trade back, you could set yourself up with the draft capital to get to then trade up next year into the range that you need to be in to take one of these potential quarterbacks. Like, I'm not saying that they have everything figured out with next year's class of quarterbacks. But if they're looking at this year's class and they're like, we don't love any of these guys, and some of the guys that we do kind of like, that we think the value is going to be there for, we can get in the later rounds, let's hold off and wait and draft one this year later, and then focus our attention on next year, trying to land guys that we maybe like better. Maybe Drew Aller. Obviously, Arch Manning's going to be part of that conversation if he decides to come out. I'm assuming he will. But just saying, like, there are options. Like, everyone thinks it's like there's no way to get back up and get these quarterbacks if, you know, you don't take one this year because you're your number two pick overall. But again, it's based off, like, we're comparing apples to apples. Like, last year, everyone was like pointing and saying, like, Washington, be like them. Well, last year's class was better than this year's class. That I can wholeheartedly say that without diving into all the tape on all these quarterbacks at this point in the draft process. Like, last year's class, worlds better than what you're seeing this year at the quarterback position. So the Browns have to think this thing through. And I do think the value in some of the quarterbacks that you can get later is why I'm also okay waiting. And like, here's the other thing. Don't forget how some of these top quarterbacks in the NFL were drafted. You had Patrick Mahomes he wasn't even in the top, was he 10? Was he picked 10? He might have been picked 10, but it took the Chiefs trading up to get that quarterback, to get that player, find that guy. And they were in like the 20s at the time, I think, drafting. Same thing can be said, I know it's a touchy subject, about Deshaun Watson. We all saw him in Houston. He was one of the best players in football, one of the best quarterbacks in the game during his time in Houston. Browns traded that pick. It was pick 12 that same year to allow the Texans to get up and draft Deshaun Watson. I get that quarterbacks are valued even more now than they were, you know, over a decade ago when those guys were taken, or I guess nearly a decade ago when those guys were taken. But at the same time, it is a possibility, and you can't just take a quarterback because you're in position to take a quarterback. Like, that's the dumbest way that anybody could draft, and that's more of a detriment to your team than anything that they could than picking any other player that might have a very, very high ceiling and is going to be a top prospect in this league. Like, that would be the worst thing you could do, is just take a quarterback because it's a massive need for you. And throw caution to the wind because you don't know, if you don't really know that it's the guy for you. I've said it before, I think Shador is the better fit. Maybe he'll be there. But I also think there's going to be complications with that, because Deion Sanders has said he's going to sort of manipulate the situation to get his son where he wants his son to go, a situation that's advantageous to his career. Is that Cleveland? Guess we got to wait and see. Guess we got to wait and find out if Cleveland is a place he would let his son go. TBD. On that. But, like I said, I am intrigued by some of these options later on, and that is part of the reason why I'm like, do I have to take one of two, or can I trade back, acquire more picks, thus acquire more talent and more players, and put yourself in a position to fill out the roster with some other areas of need addressed, and, you know, figure this thing out. I already said the other day when I was on with Jake on Monday that I think the goal for next season for the Browns is just make the playoffs. I'm not putting the bar at Super Bowls anymore. The window might not be fully closed, but that ship has sailed. Get back to the playoffs. You study the waters. You get everybody back on board with this regime. You prove that you can still, you know, that this is still the right group to lead this team. And you go on your merry way trying to get the quarterback next year that finally, you know, is a fit for everything that this team wants to do and this regime wants to do. I can get into that if you get there. You can get to the playoffs with a veteran quarterback like a Kirk Cousins, like a Sam Darnold, like one of these bridge options. I don't love those options like many of you don't. Maybe a reclamation project in Daniel Jones, whatever it's going to look like. I understand it's not the ideal situation, but you can do that by filling out the roster and putting that position up in an advantageous spot to win. So I'm okay with that. I think you got to address some of these other things. And because this quarterback class intrigues me further down the board, I think you are going to find more value in somebody like, say, Will Howard or Jalen Milroe. The connections are already being made between Jalen Milroe and Tommy Rees, and the fact that he had better numbers under Tommy Rees as the OC at Alabama than he did this past year at Alabama when Tommy Rees was here in Cleveland as the tight ends coach. Like, that's a natural thing. Maybe they like him as a later round pick. So I'm honestly intrigued by Quinn Ewers. I don't know if Quinn Ewers is going to be a first round pick or not. I think he didn't play up to what I think I'm going to be honest. Like, going into the regular season, I thought Quinn Ewers could be QB1 when this thing was all said and done. I felt that way. He took a step back this year. Didn't look like he was the elite talent that everyone thought. And so I think his stock took a hit, which makes me believe he maybe won't be a first-round pick, but I could see him being a late first-round pick. And if that's the case, Browns are going to have pick 33, so they could always trade back up into the first round to get a guy like that if they want that fifth-year option on him. Like, I think the Browns are in a perfectly advantageous situation because of where they're picking in the second round as well to be able to get that quarterback if they really feel inclined to do so late in the first round and still take a first-round guy, and it doesn't have to be the top two guys if you're just a little bit unsure about them. Like, you can still get value for a Quinn Ewers late first round, early second round, whatever. I don't know. I'm intrigued more by the idea of trading back and addressing other needs and taking one of these other quarterbacks in a you know, late day one or day two potentially, and, you know, seeing if they can coach this person into something viable at the NFL level than I am taking one at two just to take one at two. And that's where I'm at with it. So the more and more I think about it, like Daryl mentioned, I think you got to trade back at this point. I know that Mel, and we'll talk about this coming up, because I know Mel Kiper mocked Travis Hunter to the Browns at number two, and I can understand why. He's going to be one of the best players in this league, I think, by all estimations. He's one of the best players in this draft, I should say. Like, he's so versatile. There's so much you can do with him. I just don't know if he addresses either of his positions aren't like the top priority needs for the Browns right now. So I'll talk about that a little bit more. But again, this all just adds all the paths, all the dots that I'm connecting point to, for me, the solution at number two being trade out, sucker somebody into giving you a bunch of draft capital, and address other needs in the top 10 and beyond. Get draft capital for next year to potentially trade back up. And that's the direction that I think is best for this organization moving forward. 216-474-0092. Am I crazy for saying the Browns need to trade back? We'll continue the conversation on top of Mel Kiper's mock draft and what he had to say about who the Browns should take coming up. And the Buckeyes National Championship run has brought out the worst possible takes imaginable. I will get to it coming up later this hour on 92 Through the Fan. It's Spencer German with you on The Fan, and we're talking about what the Browns should be doing with the number two overall pick. I'm at a point right now where I think it's time to just accept they need to trade back. That's where I'm at. Now, a lot can still happen, a lot can still change, but we saw Mel Kiper release his latest mock draft, and he had the Browns stay and put at number two and taking Travis Hunter, the wide receiver/corner out of Colorado. We know him well. He was the Heisman winner. And I don't hate that player as a whole overall. Like, Travis Hunter, I think, is going to be a good player at the next level. I just don't know if, as I look at the Browns' needs and the look at the Browns' roster, and I talk about how, like, there's certain things that I think they already have taken it, or they can already account for that they don't need to reach on or anything like that. Like, Travis Hunter feels like he doesn't address something that's like a pressing concern for the Browns right now. If you're simply just doing best player available and that's who's at the top of your board, I get that pick there. But like wide receiver or corner, and I think he's probably going to be more of a corner at the NFL level, you don't need that right now. You got Denzel Ward. And I still think this organization feels good about MJ Emerson, despite the fact that he took a step back this year. I still view him as like a future at the position. So I don't know that it's like the most pressing thing to take Travis Hunter there, even if he is the top of your board or near the top of your board, and I imagine he will be. So this is another scenario where I'm like, just trade back. Like, if somebody really wants Travis Hunter and they want to get to two to get him, fine. Take your picks and move. I think the Browns need to look at this and realize like what they're trying to accomplish in the draft this year. And if it's simply find a quarterback, then yeah, I guess you got to take one of two because that's where you're going to get the premium player. But if you're looking and you're saying like, our goal, again, is let's get back to the playoffs. Let's get this team back on track. And you got to remember too, you look at 3-14 and you want to just throw this roster out with the bathwater because you think it's just hot garbage and we overestimated how good it could be. I'm not there with that. Like, I think this roster is good. I think the foundational pieces of this roster are great. And I think the guys around those foundational pieces are good. Some guys got to play better, yes, and they maybe some regressed a little bit. I just mentioned MJ Emerson being one of them. So they got to play better in certain instances and you know, get back to playing above the mean maybe of what some of their games are. But 3-14 was because of a lot of different things. It wasn't because the roster was hot garbage. There was parts of the roster that were bad, yes, but that wasn't solely it. It was also because they were running an offense that was historically embarrassingly bad. They had a quarterback who can't read defenses anymore and is a mental case. They had a wide receiver early in the season who clearly didn't want to be here anymore. Like, there was a number of factors that compounded, injuries being part of it, that led to 3-14. And where we are right now with the Browns drafting number 2 overall. It's about filling in the cracks. And there might be a handful of cracks to fill. That's why trading back makes the most sense. You already got 9 picks. I understand like adding more to the equation doesn't necessarily help you, but knowing Andrew Berry, he loves to trade around. He even talked about last year how he tried to trade. He just kind of joked with us in the media about trading those day 3 picks and you know, letting the team be sort of wrapped up with the draft earlier on in the day on Saturday, so we didn't have to worry about those late picks. But they ended up using them. Like, he could always trade some of those. He could always trade some of those for draft capital next year to do what I said. Put yourself in position to have a ton of picks to trade up and draft a quarterback next year. That's just where I'm at with it. It doesn't make sense to reach on these quarterbacks if it's not going to be a good fit. And I do think that Shedeur Sanders could be a good fit. But I also worry about the outside stuff with Shedeur Sanders, which revolves largely around, like, is he going to accept playing for Cleveland or is he going to force his way somewhere else? And it sounds like, based on what his dad said, they're going to do something like that. And I don't know that Cleveland's going to be on their menu. And even if Cleveland is on the menu, second things go awry here in Cleveland, because we know that tends to happen, he'll be forced his way out. And that's not what you want. It's too much. The Browns need somebody that they can buy into, that can buy into Cleveland, and that Cleveland will obviously love and adore wholeheartedly. And I don't know that that's going to be Shedeur Sanders necessarily. I'm not trying to say Shedeur Sanders is a head case. On some level, you want somebody who wants to be here. If Shedeur Sanders doesn't want to be here, you can't bank the future of your franchise on him, even if I think he's the best fit of the two quarterbacks. Along those lines, I do have interest in some of the day two guys. A guy like Quinn Ewers, who maybe still goes in the first round, but the late first round. Browns could trade back up. They got the 33rd pick. That's basically, that's like the first pick in the second round. Like, that gives you a chance to get back into the first pretty easily and get that fifth-year option on a guy. So, yeah, like, they're in a perfect position to get a – everyone's thinking about these quarterbacks because they're like, you got to take one top two without thinking about, like, sometimes you hit on a guy late. Lamar Jackson was a late first-round pick. Like, sometimes that comes to fruition. And I do think a guy like Quinn Ewers has the size and the capabilities to be – a great NFL quarterback. He just needs the right coaching, I think, to put it together and iron out some of the kinks that we saw this year in college. But that's what getting to the next level is supposed to be about. You're supposed to be able to get nurtured. You're supposed to be able to get coached. You're supposed to be able to develop even further in your game. I hope the Browns can be that for him. But I'm more intrigued by the quarterbacks in day two, than I am about the top two guys. And so this is further bolstering my reasoning why I think you got to trade back at a number two. And that's where I'm at with it. I'm digging my feet in the sand. Let's go to the phones. Jake up first and out of the fan. What's up, Jake?
What's up, man? Let's save the second-round pick. Let's get the guy that's going to help out Myles Garrett, Abdul Carter? And then for the second pick, let's pick a running back that's going to help out Nick Chubb. You know, because Nick Chubb, we don't know how he's going to be like in the next year, you know, in terms of his health. So let's get back to Browns football. Let's run the ball. Let's run a play action. And then another thing, too, before I let you go, I know, like, a quarterback is probably an essential need in this league. I'm thinking about the former first-round picks like Mac Jones or even Zach Wilson. You know, bring those guys in. You know, let's save a draft pick and let's bring those guys in. Give them a shot. You know, because we looked at Sam Darnold in the Vikings uniform. You know, people thought that he was done. He's 27 years old. He had a great year at 14 wins. He had a bad last two games and whatnot. But he's going to get a big contract after this year, at least a decent one. So your thoughts with that take?
Yeah, Jake, I appreciate the call. Listen, I don't love Zach Wilson. But again, I think – there's enough proof and evidence that a veteran sort of reclamation project can win you games and get you to the playoffs. We just saw it this year with Sam Darnold. You know, I guess I'd be more intrigued by like a Daniel Jones than I probably would a Zach Wilson. But like, I think that's probably going to be the route that they go. I think Kirk Cousins is probably part of the equation as well. And then I do think they'll draft a rookie. I just don't think it's going to be with the number two pick. I will say this. Running back, if I'm sitting here right now, and this is kind of off, on a whim here, I'm going to do this. If I'm sitting here right now and I'm ranking the Browns' positional needs, I think left tackle is number one, and I believe that in my heart of hearts. I haven't even really mentioned the tackles that could be up there. I know Will Campbell's been brought up. He's being talked about, though, as more of a guard at the NFL level, which I think is interesting. So I don't know. Maybe Kelvin Banks Jr. from Texas is the next guy up. But I think tackle's the biggest need. I also think defensive end, which the Abdul Carter thing comes into play there, is a major need because the rent-a-pass rusher program has worked okay to this point. But I just think, especially as Myles Garrett, you know, flirts with the idea that he could play his career elsewhere if the Browns don't start turning it around, I wonder if, you know, if drafting a young, up-and-coming pass rusher that you can build around, if Myles Garrett were to force his way out or something, and also to pair with Myles Garrett is you know, the way to go here. Because you can never have too many great pass rushers, in my opinion. So I think pass rushers up there, I'd probably put that number two. I think running back is probably number three. Maybe for some people, running back is number two. I think running back's in the top three in terms of needs for this team. No doubt, if you're taking quarterback out of the equation, obviously quarterback is the consensus thing that they need the most. But if that's not necessarily something that they feel comfortable with in that, at number two, you go down the list, I think it's tackle, defensive end, running back. And so I do like the idea of taking running back in this draft. The biggest thing with the running backs, though, there's not necessarily a ton of positions that are like being bantied about as being elite this year in the draft, but this running back class is the one. This year's running back class is phenomenal. From Genty to Omari and Hampton out of North Carolina, Caleb Johnson, who I think Buckeyes fans know pretty well, out of Iowa. Buckeyes fans certainly know Trevion Henderson and Quinshon Judkins, assuming both of them come out. which they'll reveal that coming up this week. They have till Friday to declare. Corey Kiner from Cincinnati, even a guy like Cam Scadaboo? I think it's Scadaboo. I don't know that I think Cam Scadaboo is going to be like, you know, Christian McCaffrey, Swiss Army knife style player, but I could just, like, that guy just screams Cleveland Browns to me. So, like, they would love Cam Scadaboo here in Northeast Ohio. There's Kalel Mullins from Michigan, Donovan Edwards from Michigan, like some guys who I think still have to develop a little bit, but I think could be pretty solid players. This running back class is great. And so I do think the Browns will take a running back. It's just going to be a matter of where and when. The nice thing is they have a pretty, pretty deep cast of names to choose from. And we'll see which one they sort of fall in love with or which one they like here. But there are some really good names on this list. So, yeah, listen, like, I'm guessing Genty is the only one that goes in the first round. He's elite. He's probably worthy of that. Behind him, we'll see where the chips kind of fall. And I actually do want to talk about I know we was talking about Will Howard the last couple of days as a potential option at quarterback for the Browns, which I brought up in the first segment as well. There's a different Ohio State Buckeye that I really want in a Cleveland Browns uniform. I'll tell you about it coming up in the 8 o'clock hour. But as I was saying, I am more intrigued by the idea of there's some promise shown with these guys that might not be the top tier of the quarterback class that you can get maybe late first round, day two, whatever, and seeing if the Browns can develop those guys, then I am just trying to reach on one of these top quarterbacks and take one because you think it's such a dire need that you have to do it and just screwing it up entirely. You could set the organization, or I guess not you, but Andrew Berry could set the organization back even further if he doesn't nail that pick. And so for all these reasons I've laid out, I'm team trade back. I alluded to them potentially doing that earlier in the offseason. I'm officially there myself now. I think that is the route that they should take, and probably the route they will take. We'll see as we get closer and closer to it. 216-474-0092 on Twitter at @Spencito_. If you want to jump in at any point, chime in. Let me know your thoughts on what the Browns should do with the number 2 overall pick. Coming up, though, in about 5 to 6 minutes from now, Ohio State won the national championship on Monday. Out of the woodwork comes some of the worst takes I've ever heard about college football. I will talk about it. Well, and the Buckeyes, too. But I will talk about it coming up next here on 92.3 The Fan. Players are changing teams and hands all the time. It's not so easy to just keep that together for an extended period of time and hoard grasp your clutch your prospects and clutch your young players that you recruited for years and years and years on end. That's what made this so unique. It was kind of the blending of both worlds, the old and the new ways of doing it in college football. So I think it's important to keep that in mind. Because the fact that they were outspent, like other teams outspent Ohio State. Oregon did, Texas did. I've seen some conflicting reports that Notre Dame even might have. So it's not like they were the only ones who spent money to build their roster. And then I tell that to people, and the comments I get back are like, after they say that Ohio State's just the Dodgers of college football. And my response to that is then, once they start going down this crazy path of saying, they've ruined college football, I'll never watch again. I want to know where they were the last like 2 decades plus. Because there's always been the haves and the have-nots in college football. That's how it's worked. How do you think Bama kept their team so damn good all those years? It wasn't just Nick Saban. There was a lot of money that was changing hands and being exchanged behind closed doors and $100 handshakes that were kept private. That's what was going on behind the scenes. All these teams. Ohio State was part of it back then too. So if you're complaining now because one of the biggest ones I got was it's just like baseball and Ohio State's the Dodgers. Guys, where have you been? Where have you been? Why were you such a big college football fan when this was going on and just was secret? Is it the only difference is that now it's public. That's the only difference between the money that's being exchanged now. Maybe there's more money being spent than ever before. I'll give you that. But the only difference is that the amount of money that's being spent is public. That's it. So now that it's not amateurism, you're mad because it wasn't amateurism before. I can promise you that. These teams are spending money like madmen to build these elite teams. There's a lot of money in college football. A lot of it was going to players before NIL was even a thing. So I despise any takes that have to do with blocking out college football and Ohio State's ruined it and they only won because they spent money. That's the way college football has worked for decades. By the way, that's the way that sports in general have worked for forever. Money is the bottom line. Like, every sport has money involved. So the idea that, like, they bought their championship, complete and utter garbage. Miss me with the buying a championship takes. Every team is buying a championship on some level. Every team that wins is buying their wins, their championships, all of it. The Cavs, they got a great team this year, leading the NBA. Guess what? All those guys are making money. Did they all? No matter what, there's money involved. That means maybe the problem is that some teams spend more than others. And baseball is a terrible example because, yeah, the Dodgers right now are doing what they're doing. It's annoying and ridiculous, and it can't be sustainable. And it does seem a little unfair. But I get more mad in baseball about the teams that aren't spending money, like the A's and the Rays, than I do the teams that do spend money. Because the teams that aren't spending money are the bigger problems. They're the ones who are like, well, we're just not going to do it, and we don't have money, and blah, blah, blah. Like, spend money to make money. Sorry, I can't subscribe to that. But the idea that, like, college football is just so bad now, and it's so top-heavy, and Ohio State's ruined it because they're going out here and spending $20 million and not everybody can do that. That's been college football for years. Like, where have you been if you're just now realizing that money's being spent to chase titles? Nothing is ruined about college football. And if anything, because I think the team Ohio State had this year is going to be hard to replicate because it's not as easy to keep your players for 3-4 years on end. If anything, the teams that are spending money on a lower level, if they invest it right, that levels the playing field with those teams that are considered the elites of the elites. So, in general, NIL should help level the playing field. That's a good thing for college football. So the money, while yes, there's still the teams with more resources, the teams that at least have some resources have a more even playing field than they ever have before because there's money now being spent that is public knowledge to everybody. So, again, spare me the outrage over Ohio State spending money on their roster to win a title. My goodness, have you ever watched sports before? Give it a rest. Worst possible takes. And the other one, obviously, is the Michigan one. I'll try to talk about that coming up later in the show. But when we get back, the debut of a new segment that I'm calling Hard Truths. And it's all about conference championship weekend. We do it next, right here on The Fan.
From the trusted team behind 48 Hours, welcome to Case by Case, your weekly update on the biggest true crime stories unfolding right now.
Nick Reiner remains in custody without bail.
Luigi Mangione accused of stalking and gunning down United Healthcare CEO Brian Thompson.
From high-profile trials and stunning evidence to major breaks in cold cases, we'll follow it all case by case. Follow and listen to 48 Hours Case by Case wherever you get your podcasts.